always been a unique person, you know what I mean? Sort of laid back in a way, but very adamant and very passionate about what I believe. I think a lot of times that sort of throws people off because they don't expect me to have the mindset or the process of thought that I do. And so when you come in to watch my channel, you may hear a myriad of thoughts and ideas that could be different from others. What I want you to do is just sit back, like, share, and subscribe. To receive instant notification each time I upload, please hit the subscribe button and the bell notification. Helping you along the way. Helping you to make it through another day.
Already know me. You already know that I'm already going to have something blocking my face or something not coming on at the right time. That's why I love you guys, because you already know me. But I want to welcome each and every one of you to the show today. I am very, very honored to have an exceptional guest with us. You know, we've had a lot of great folks that have come out and joined us at different times, and today is no different. The only difference today is that this individual has written several books. Not only has she done that, she has been in great danger from time to time. Let me explain that. As an activist and as a woman who takes care of people, who loves people, believe it or not, she was in an Israeli prison. Go figure. It's none other than Dr. Cynthia McKinney. Now, I know that a lot of people will say, well, gee whiz, what kind of introduction is that? It's a Shiro introduction. It's an introduction that lets you know that this woman has more, as they used to say, I'm not going to say cojones, but I just did, didn't I? This lady is bold. This woman has been in the government. She has stood her ground on several different things as it relates to knowing who she is, what she was sent to Washington for, what it was and who it was that she represented. And in tandem with knowing all of that, she made sure that she did her best to do her gig while she was there. She did what she was sent there to do, right? A little thrown off today. You know, sometimes when you got some good stuff about to happen, you get a couple of two or three little things that'll toss you around. Well, let me just tell you how bold this woman is. She actually wrote an open letter to the president. Two of them dated right back to back. And we're going to get into all of that. But right now, what we're going to talk about is when China sneezes. When China sneezes. Wow. That's a heck of a title, but China sneezed, and now look at where we all are right now today. Here in America, across the world, across the United States, we are dealing with a bevy of things, specifically because China sneezed. Plandemic or not, I don't know. What do you want to call it? It's up to you, but we're all dealing with it, right? I'm going to welcome right now to the stream Dr. Cynthia McKinney. Dr. McKinney, I am so blessed to have you here today. Thank you so very much.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to come on. And you do look spectacular. Oh, my gosh. So maybe I should have stayed audio only.
Well, Because I was going to get nervous. Somebody could have said, that was her cousin. That wasn't Cynthia McKinney. That was her cousin. You know how folks will get a hold to you. And I'll be like, no, it really was her. It really was. You know, I want to thank you so much for coming. I have been looking over a great deal of information. You and I have a great something about us, something. You just remind me of me and vice versa. And here's why. I really looked at last week. And I made a parody of the video that was talking about, I called it, oh, look at all the pretty colors. And it was basically dealing with purple. And then I get a hold of a 23 page of Dynamite, The Purple Revolution.
Oh my gosh, you read it.
Oh, did I read it? And I thought to myself, OMG, we are one.
Okay.
Yeah, that part. Lived in Atlanta for several years.
Okay.
It was red as far as the state is concerned.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Purple Revolution for a moment, can we?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Okay. I want you to fill in everybody else, because I did do a parody about a week ago after the inauguration, and the parody was, wow, look at this purple. Look at that purple. This one was in purple.
Yeah.
So it was really so much a part of the color revolution.
That's right.
And so as soon as we had the inauguration, I immediately ran and I put the video together. And I don't think people really got it, but it was almost as if the tail that was wagging the dog was saying, see, we got you. We got you.
Well, that's true.
Gotcha. We got you anyway.
True.
So I'm going to give you the screen, and I'd like for you to share with everyone about that. I was amazed, and it's a very good read. And then we're going to get into the purpose of what I really wanted to talk to was the new book,
yes.
When China Sneezes. We got to get into that. We've only got an hour with her, but we're going to get into that too. So here we go.
Okay. So, I was watching from abroad the Kavanaugh hearings and everything that unfolded. And I said, this looks like something I've seen before. Since my area of specialty is international relations. And when I was in the Congress, I served on the International Relations Committee. But that came after my studies, which were all in international relations, my undergrad degree, my graduate degree as well. And then of course my PhD was about Hugo Chavez's Venezuela and the revolution that took place there. So I looked at what happened and it looked eerily familiar to me. And so your audience would probably know that the United States, in terms of its relations with Africa and Asia, has fomented chaos and enabled not even the 1%, but select individuals to be able to steal the resources from those two continents. And of course, there's no other explanation that we can find when we look at Africa being the planet's wealthiest continent, and yet the people are among the poorest. And so I looked at what was happening, and it looked eerily familiar with a U.S. context to what I had seen before in other places. So I started thinking and looking and trying to see, okay, who are the players behind this and what might that all mean? And as it turns out, that some of the same players that were responsible for, I have another book, is called How the U.S. Creates S-Hole Countries, because remember our President Trump back in the day called certain countries S-Hole Countries. And so I said, well, I need to write a book and let people know how those countries came to be the way that they are. So I was looking at that, and the final chapter in that book deals with the United States. Actually, we start off with the United States and the African-American community being affected by a sort of internal colonialism policy. And then in the end, we look at how the United States could fare. And unfortunately, all of the indices at that point, from life expectancy, maternal mortality, infant mortality, you look at these indices and they're supposed to indicate the well-being of a population, the success, you could say, of a state. And the United States was failing on these most important indices. And that was the way we ended that book. And so then I saw what was happening with the Kavanaugh hearings. And I said, okay, let me investigate. And so the Purple Revolution, hybrid warfare, and U.S. chickens coming home to roost is the story of how the United States has engaged with the rest of the world, creating these color revolutions, and then looking at what happened in the United States, what happened then with Kavanaugh, and wondering if what we were seeing was yet another color revolution come home. It was this. The United States has practiced hybrid warfare all over the world, and now are the people who perpetrated those tactics and strategies against other countries, are they now using it against us in the United States? That was my question. And my answer was yes.
Exceptional. Exceptional. Yes, 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 yes. Now, to your point with regards to that, because I think that for a long time, we were not necessarily connecting the dots here in America. And I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that it's because we had the two sides thing. You know, to me personally, I believe that it's one coin with two sides. Yes. And what it looked like was going on here in America was everybody was divided by either their ethnicity or either the you know, they were using all these different things against us. And so we were so distracted by either ethnicity or either the party or whatnot. We really did not see what happened and how we arrived to where we are right now. Now, I know that in tandem with the color revolution, they utilized, and by they, I mean the powers that be, you know, they use a lot of NGOs.
Yes, that's right.
And I see that a lot of the countries that have had success helping to stave off or to prolong them from being able to come in and do this, a lot of them have sort of said, you're not coming in here with that. Do you think that we were a little bit too giving with our hospitality, Matt, as it were? What say you?
Well, I think a state has a responsibility to protect the population within the state. And so what we have witnessed, though, is that the United States more and more and more and more or less and less actually protecting its own people. And that's why I believe when Trump said America first and you saw all of this fallback and people were saying, oh, what does that mean? I never will forget when Lindsey Graham said, well, what does that mean? Well, you know, it's been so long since the people of the United States were put first that these politicians didn't know how to react, but that's what they should have been serving us all along, and they weren't. Yes. And that was unfortunately the reason I got into trouble when I was up there, is because I wanted to serve my constituents first.
I'm going to let you tell everybody about that. I'm going to come off the screen and give her the opportunity to tell you about the trouble that she got into. And you're going to understand this is some good trouble.
Well, basically, I went into a situation in Georgia, like being the first Black to run for Congress outside of the city of Atlanta. So I had to deal with the reality of what Georgia is today, and in fact was back in 1992 when I was first campaigning for the Congress. And basically, you still had a very active Klan. And the Klan, they would send messages to the campaign saying, don't stay after dark. don't say after the sun goes down. So we, you know, we abided by some of that while we were campaigning. My campaign workers who volunteers were mostly Black and in the rural areas, and they were attacked, viciously attacked. And one woman had her house shot into. And she said, "Cynthia, if I had just sat up in my bed, I'd be dead. I would have been shot in the head." So this is the kind of environment that I entered into. And so when I was in the and I finally was able to win, mm-hmm. and I had to justify my existence on the Hill mm-hmm. at every moment. And so it was like I was in siege warfare or trench warfare, because every day was a battle just to be there. And the thing that was so important to my constituents is that when they went up to Washington with me for the swearing in, and they raised their hands too. When I raised my hand and I took my oath of office, they raised their hands too, because this was really, this was a movement. It was far beyond the capacity for one person to do what we were able to do. It was way beyond what even the group of us, the small mm-hmm. group of us, were able to do. While I was in the Congress, though, the country's most well-endowed civil rights organization, which is the Anti-Defamation League, sided with the white constituents who didn't appreciate my victory. And wow. So they said, "She won as a result of a racial gerrymander, and we have to dismantle the district." And the Anti-Defamation League became part of the racist drive to make the Georgia congressional delegation all white again. And so that was, you know, when I say I literally had to struggle every day that I was there, I had to Capitol Hill police officers who didn't like the way that I dressed because I wore bright colors. I was younger. I had my hair natural, as I always wear my hair natural. And so I was quite different than the Curtis Collins or the Maxine Waters, who was already there mm-hmm. and, you know, more establishment. I was anti-establishment, but I was put in a place that was extremely establishment. And that my anti-establishmentarianism mm-hmm. reflected in everything I did. One of the things that I can say before the district was dismantled mm-hmm. is that I helped a total of 50 Black people get elected to public office in that rural area. And even today, in 2021, I still get phone calls from my former constituents in rural Georgia who appreciate what I did to help them, to empower them, to educate them, and to make them finally feel as if when they say the Pledge of Allegiance, it actually means something for them.
Amen. Amen to that. I mean, she gets me going. You know, I'm about, you know, it's something, because I think a lot of people have always mistaken the term patriotism to just mean you are a white person.
Right.
I'm going to be candid with you.
And right.
For me, I have always loved my country. I lived overseas while my former husband was military. We had two children over there. And back in that day, they say you'd either get a baby or a shrunk or you'd end up going back. So we got the kids. We didn't go back. But with that said, I've always loved my country. And I think over the past several years, and I will look specifically, well, we'll just have to put it in a big capsule. Let's just stretch it all the way out to the last 16 years, right? We have been bombarded with anti-America. When I was a child, I remember seeing the big campaigns for Buy America or It's Made in America was a very good thing. But right now, today, no matter what shade of human you are lambasted specifically because you love your country. How has that affected you, first of all? And then there's another piece to what you said a few minutes ago. And you mentioned the fact that you know, you walked in bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, ready to get the work done. You took the oath. You stood there. You know what the job is. You see the job description, and then you start to do it. And now you in trouble for doing it.
That's right.
Because it seems to me, Cynthia, that you went in saying, okay, well, this is what my gig is, and I know this. And then when you start to do it, you expect it, if you were ever called into to task, you expected to hear a great job. But instead, it sounds like somebody may have pulled your coattail and said, hey, oh, wait a minute, we don't do that here. And your mindset was, I thought that was the job. Wait a minute, I didn't get the memo. That's the impression I'm getting. Is that what happened? Tell us about that. And then if you're able to, I want to talk about the pledge.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's very important for us to make the distinction between nationalism and patriotism. And so basically what I experienced when I was trying to get elected, what I experienced when I was trying to remain on Capitol Hill was various nationalisms. And I think what Putin has done in the used to be Soviet Union, but now in Russia, what he has done as he's focused less on nationalism and more on patriotism. Because, you know, quite frankly, I have participated in comments that have been prepared for the conditions that African-Americans face inside the United States, describing those conditions. And so we had to figure out what to call ourselves, you know, because we don't even know what to call ourselves. And eventually my name will be Cynthia X, you know, because who are we? But the United States is the only country we know. And so I experienced a little bit of this, of my ignorance of the sort of the totality on the African continent, when I bought some clothes and I thought, oh, this is wonderful, this is beautiful. And I thought that this was appropriate for anywhere I went on the continent. And what I discovered is that what's fashionable in Central Africa is quite different than what you would see in Senegal, for example, or Cote d'Ivoire. So it dawned on me how little I really knew about the African culture. And what I am and what I know is the culture that these descendants of Africans enslaved in the US. This is Vernelia. I think her last name is Robinson. Oh, why did I forget her last name? But anyway, Vernelia Randall is a lawyer. Well, she's a JD, and she does a lot of focus on the conditions as a result of the Convention on Elimination of Racial Discrimination. And Bill Clinton signed the United States to the CERD. So that requires a review by the international bodies to look at the United States. And it also requires people in the United States to make submissions. So what we did was we made a submission. And in that submission, this was a few years ago. And in that submission, we called ourselves descendants of Africans enslaved in the US. Now, I know that there's a new movement that has come in the last, say, two or so years, ADOS, but I believe that a more technical and a more correct language would be descendants of Africans enslaved in the US, because that's what we are. So, well, anyway, so this idea that we are not supposed to love what we know. Well, we love what we know. It's even been, it has been unkind to us. But it is through our struggle that we make this situation less unkind for us. And we have seen historically how when Black people struggle, we win. When we unite and mobilize and educate each other, we win. Well, part of what's going on now is the elimination of our ability to unite, mobilize, educate each other. And that's why outlets like yours are very important, so that we can communicate with each other, utilizing the technology of the day. We communicate with each other and we discuss ways in which to improve our situation.
I think that's exceptional. I love it. You know, let me see, where are we right now? Okay, this is a perfect timing. So here's the deal. We've got about 34 minutes left with our awesome guest today. And there's so much stuff, you guys, that I really wanted to ask. I'm going to tell you, I've got stacks on stacks on. And you guys know how I interview. You all know I got mountains of stuff. But I prayed before I came out and I said, you know what? I just want her to share let her share whatever she wants to share. We'll give the topic. Of course, we got to get to the book because we need to sell some of these books. Now, I'm going to take a little sidebar, you guys. Now, listen, I put a link down below and you can go to her website and get it. But if you have Amazon and it's right there in your cell phone right now, you can just push the button and get it. You got the link right in there right now in the description, and you can just push that button and go on through Amazon, and it takes you right through her Amazon page, and you can just have it by a next couple of days because it is a primable product. So you can get it on Prime. So if I don't say anything else before we leave, the link is in the description down below right now. It is When China Sneezes. It's going to help you dispel a lot of the things you thought you knew. It's going to answer some other questions, and it's also going to pose some questions to give you some critical thinking, to utilize some critical thought that what we're dealing with right now has many tentacles. And so that's why I want you to make sure that before we go any further, that you guys go right down there in the description box and bless her, okay? You go ahead and click that in the Amazon description box. It's right there. I wanted to talk to you.
May I ask you to go full screen and get a copy of the book?
Oh, yes. Oh, it's okay. You don't have to. I got you. You ain't got to go nowhere. Oh, no. You ain't got to go nowhere. The one thing they taught me how to do is this.
Oh, fabulous.
Okay. There you go. Now, do you all see this right here? This is available right here. All right. So let's go. Let's just go. Available now directly from Clarity. COVID-19, the big picture, 2019 novel coronavirus, now officially SARS-CoV-2, stole global headlines in the opening months of 2020, and its many impacts are still to play out. So we don't exactly where we're headed with this. The common adage, if America sneezes, the world catches a cold, is now demonstrable. Oh my gosh. In a multiplicity of ways, because now we've flipped the script, but it's China who has now sneezed. Mm-hmm. So this book by Cynthia McKinney is dealing with, she's going to tell you, go right ahead.
Okay, so basically what happened was in late 2020, I go where U.S. is dropping bombs. I know that we have pre-war propaganda, and the propaganda diminishes the lives of the people who are the next targets of U.S. bombs and missiles. So basically, we were in an environment in 2019. We were in an environment where the war drums were beating against China. And so what I wanted to do was to help people cut through all of this propaganda and see China for what it is, whether that's good or bad or whatever, but to go there and actually experience it. And so at that point, remember that the war drums were beating about the way China treats its Muslim population. Well, now, you know, the last thing in the world that the United States should have credibility on is criticizing another country for the way it treats Muslims, whether they're its own or Muslims at large, because inside the United States, there has literally been a witch hunt against Muslim organizations that have anything to do with the Palestinian cause. And people are in prison today for nothing more than Palestinian Americans for nothing more than supporting their brothers and sisters and family members back home in Palestine. So it doesn't take much to trip the wire inside the United States. Okay, and the wars since George Herbert Walker Bush have all been about suppressing the any potential antagonist to the state of Israel, suppressing them, stripping them of all of their political and military wherewithal, so that now I hate to get into this language, but so that Israel can maintain suzerainty over that entire region and those peoples, wherever they might be. So, for example, you have the situation in Sudan, where Sudan was Balkanized. Why? Because it has a potential, had the potential of becoming a very powerful Muslim majority country, and it needed to be stripped of that power, stripped of the ability to operate as such, and it had oil wealth. So that oil wealth would have been able to allow Sudan to become very prominent in more than just the culture of Muslim life. Many Sudanese are sought after as teachers of Arabic because they speak Arabic perfectly. And there's this whole geopolitical scenario is playing out, and the United States is becoming more and more swept up in fighting the wars that empower Israel. But absolutely, at the same time, we are becoming more and more debilitated. Absolutely. Because what Lyndon Johnson learned is that you can't have guns and butter with Vietnam. You cannot have a great society if you're destroying somebody else's society and shifting all of your resources to make yourself great over there to destroy other people. So you can't have guns and butter. And the Israel, the requirements for a greater Israel require the U.S. more and more of the U.S. military and more U.S. resources. Okay, so that the attack on China by way of its Muslim population caused a group of us to look and say, look at this, look at the hypocrisy of this. So basically what I did was I led a delegation of 18 people from the United States and 2 people from the UK to China. We went to China. We arrived 2 days after Christmas. And basically our itinerary was to travel throughout China, starting in Beijing, which is like equivalent to being in New York, maybe New York in a combination, New York, DC, and travel as far west, which is where the Muslim majority province is, Xinjiang. So we had stops along the way, but we ended up in Xinjiang. And we wanted to see in those stops along the way and both of the anchors, what was going on with Chinese Muslims? Were they discriminated against? Did we see this discrimination? Did we talk to them? did they feel as if they were discriminated against? On and on and on and on. And so, mm-hmm. you know, man on the street kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. So we did that, and we were in China up until January 10th. And it was at that time that the whole Wuhan situation mm-hmm. was unfolding. We're traveling, we're looking at the news. We don't see anything about what's going on in Wuhan. Wuhan was not on our itinerary, and China is a huge country.
Of course.
So, you know, we were just flying from place to place. Okay, so January 20th or thereabouts, China locks down after we arrive in the U.S. and we're stunned. We're totally stunned that we're there. Something of this magnitude has taken place. I said to myself, well, let me see how the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, how well they are monitoring the situation, because since we just came back from China, we should be contacted. Well, of course, we weren't contacted because it's a whole, you know, that was would go against the whole point. It's not about taking care of the people of the U.S. And so what was a book that was going to have the people on the delegation write about what they saw turned into a necessary book about what China and then the rest of the world began to experience. So I put together people who could write about science without being overly scientific. Mm-hmm. And I have people who contributors from all over the world, because the world at first is when China sneezes, and we were looking at that, the photo on the bottom mm-hmm. are the cranes. Those are the cranes when China built the hospital in a week. They built a hospital in a week. And so they just moved. It was like amazing. They moved all of the cranes there, bulldozers and things like that. They moved them there. They moved the earth out. They built, I think it was several thousand bed hospital. Actually, they ended up building two of them within weeks. And they showed what is possible when you marshal resources properly. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's what that picture is down there. And the top picture, of course, is the what we are told the SARS coronavirus 2 looks like.
But I have another, some stuff that I printed out. And I'm sorry about the shuffling of the paper, y'all. Forgive me. And it says that this is what it actually looks like, which doesn't look like that to me. Or does it? Am I just looking at it in a different way? You see this right here. Can you see that? I'm not sure.
Yes,
if you guys-
I can see a little bit. And I've seen that. I've seen that photograph. I think that is a close-up of what that is. So you see, you've got these spikes, and those spikes are what give it the supposedly give it the name corona. So anyway,
the little crowns, like
exactly, that's right. So now here's the thing, and why this information is important for your audience. Mm-hmm. I take hydroxychloroquine 200 milligrams once a month. Hmm. It is not a surprise that when I say African fertility is under attack, no one, and in fact, the director of Hidden Colors, is my understanding, is doing a new video on, I don't know the name of it, but I saw a trailer. Someone sent me a trailer, and it's about this whole matter of, remember when we were lynched back in the day, the men's testicles were cut off. And if a woman was pregnant, they would cut open her belly and kill the, you know, kill the child as they were killing the
mother. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. The mother. So African fertility out. Period. But then not just period. It's also when we do procreate with other races, we predominate. That's a genetic reality of the African DNA that travels with us. And in fact, Chinese did a study because, you know, the Chinese had always thought that they were descended from a special race. That was a special, it wasn't Homo sapiens, the same Homo sapiens from Africa. It was a different Homo sapiens. And that's mm-hmm. what they thought. Mm-hmm. And the geneticist, a doctor, took about 12 to 15,000 samples of DNA from Chinese across. And what they found was that in every one of them, that out of Africa migration, it was, you know, that started in East Africa, that out of Africa migration is there within the people. And what the geneticist said is that now we understand that we're all brothers. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I wrote the chapter on genocide in the book. And basically the question I was asking is, can you take a virus? And I understand the unsettled science around whether viruses exist or not. But whatever this thing is, can you take that and target a subpopulation?
Sure you can.
We know that the Israelis were trying to find a brown bomb to kill off the Arabs. We know that the South Africans, in conjunction with the Israelis, were trying to, Afrikaners within South Africa were doing research to see if they could kill Black people only, put an agent in the water and it would kill Black people and keep them safe. Hmm. Well, SARS coronavirus 2, I believe, is that selective, has the selectivity that people like that eugenicists have long been looking for. And now you're not going to get this from anybody else because, one, everybody's talking about COVID-19. So they talk about the disease and they talk about, well, you know, Black people have comorbidities or Black people have poverty. And so as a result of that, they're more prone to die. But no one talks about, I went to a conference and the entire conference was about COVID-19. Nobody talked about SARS coronavirus 2. Why? Because I was the only Black person there too, giving a presentation. And so, but it's like, okay, who's going to tell you, well, this virus has been created with population-specific specificity. Hmm. Who's going to tell you that? And you know, I've been there. Dell Bigtree will talk about vaccines. I've been there with them. Dr. Andrew Wakefield will talk about certain things, but you will not get, okay, how was SARS coronavirus 2 created? Where was it created? And why is it that people in Australia were testing positive for HIV after they took the SARS, the COVID vaccine?
I want to interject. I always say that my chat, my co-laborers are by far the smartest anywhere. And if you all will remember, we did a program a while ago and we had a video that we were sharing. And what we were talking about, Cynthia, was the fact that there was a an article that was published in The Lancet way back a year ago, and it showed three different components as having been inserted on purpose inside of what we consider this name that we call the candy bar here, because they try to jack us and take us off the air. But anyway, there were three things, and one was HIV, the other one was SARS, and the other one was MERS, and they were all in this thing at the same time, and that depending on which angle it hit when it went into the cell, it would dictate, or it would dictate exactly what the host would be dealing with. Hence, when I saw the people end up with this false positive, as they called it, it took me back. It took my memory back to that, having read that and having seen that they immediately had them remove it from The Lancet, which, as you know, excuse me, is a renowned piece of work, if you want to call it like it, just as an organization, just as, you know, just even print, no matter what it is, they are the superior, and they had them remove it.
That's correct.
I want to talk to you about that. I know we only have about 14 minutes. I saw your schedule in that I was scanning your name to see my ad that I put on YouTube for you, and then I found another show you have to go to later. So I said, I got to hurry. I got to ask so many questions. I have so many. The first thing that I want to do, we've already shared with everybody. I need you guys to make sure that you go down below. You can get it on her website. You can also click the link and you will go directly to Amazon for your convenience. Listen, we just want you to get it. I really want you to go to her directly and get it. But if you can't, and it's about time that you can't do it, you know, you're saying, I only got 5 minutes. I just please go in the link and get it there from Amazon if you must. But here's what I want to know. The first thing is, they seem to always... Here's two things I've said here, and everybody that is co-laborer with me here on the channel will tell you. I've always felt that slavery, as an example, because the country is so young, that slavery, as an example, was a test to see exactly how you could subdue a people. And then they decided later to roll it on out, and last year was the time frame that they did that. Now everybody is going to walk into antebellum times with masks and things of that nature. Now we are all being reminded that we are yet chattel to them. That's the first thing. And I'm saying all this so fast, you guys, because after that I'm going to give her the rest of the show and I won't ask anything else. But then the second and the most important thing to that point is, why is it that every single time I turn around, it appears that they're using my community, people who look like me, even though I have Native American descent? I think all of us here, especially that look copper color like us, most of us do. We came from someplace, right? Why is it that every time I turn around, they're using our community to stoke fear, whether it be based on this situation or anything else? They use it against fear. They use us to make people feel guilty so that they can then promulgate their own evil, wicked ways. I have looked back, and every time I do, that is basically what I see. I see that now they're trying to say everybody that looks like me should run and go get it. Go get this shot. Now, I'm going to say this because it's incumbent upon me to bring up the similarity and to bring up how convenient. And that is, Hank Aaron said right there on the 5th, bless his soul. And I believe they're having a service of some sort for him today. But he went and got this injection. And basically it was, to me, used as a way to say, see, he did it. You guys go do it. But they didn't expect for it to come back later and harm him. I know they came out the other day and said, oh, he died of natural causes, peacefully in his sleep. Listen, I ain't God, but I do know that there is something that is awry, and they always attempt to use us. I want to know why. I also want to know, I'm going to just ask those two questions and I'm going to leave. Oh, and then someone is a very good friend of mine told me the other day, he said, will you please tell her, she doesn't even know me, but will you please tell her that I think she is an outstanding person and hello for me? And I said, okay, I will. So Dr. I want to tell you that Lieutenant Colonel Roy Potter, Royston Potter, wanted me to tell you hello. There, I did it. Those two questions, and we only have a few minutes. Thank you so much. Go ahead.
Okay, why do they use us? Because quite frankly, we are the easiest population to trick and fool. And it's painful for me to say that. We suffer because we don't have knowledge. And I mean, well, you know, and we don't have protection either, because we've disarmed, we've voluntarily disarmed ourselves in a very hostile environment. I don't think any living organism would disarm itself when it is under attack. And yet that's what we have done. And our politics, I say, have said, long said, we practice the politics of self-abnegation, because it's as if we just want to wipe ourselves off the map, the political map. And so we're used, and we will continue to be used until we stop allowing other people to pick our leaders. So now you've got someone who has always been in the back pocket of those who want to oppress us the most, and she's being put forward as a leader for Black people. And of course, that means a leader for all people too, in the US context. But we're gonna get it in very much the same way that Barack Obama was put forward as a leader for Black people. And yet his parents and his grandparents were intelligence operatives. And this information is available, but we just, I can't explain it. I don't understand it. All I know is that as far as I am concerned, I've done some heavy lifting in terms of where I fit on the political spectrum. And I would say that the system in the United States is so rotten, it's so bad, that only a complete revolution, total destruction, is what is required. But when it's rebuilt, you can't have justice Democrats who have millions of dollars in the bank rebuilding, because they're not going to rebuild anything. They've been sent there to trick us again. So what is it that we have to have? We've got to have authentic leaders known in the community that are owned and controlled by us. And those are the people that we sit on our shoulders and have them represent us to a larger community. Until we do that, we will always be used. We will be the fodder for other people's dreams, visions, aspirations, and experiments.
Oh my goodness. I love the way you put it. I couldn't have said it any better. You guys, this has been the best 53 minutes that I've had in a long time. And I hope you feel the exact same way. Our guest tonight, or today, we're usually doing Saturday Night is Live, but our guest today is Dr. Cynthia McKinney. Dr. Cynthia McKinney was literally thrown in a prison, in an Israeli prison, because of the fact that she was forging ahead to help the less fortunate. She gets on the ground and she goes into countries and she sees exactly what's happening. She went directly in to Libya and she was on the ground. She saw what was happening. She sees what's happening here. And the book is a warning to all of us to glean as much information as possible. These whole countries, how we have our hand in it, is another book that you need to get. And I'm going to tell you that for us, everywhere we go, we seem to put our hands all on stuff. And after we put our hands on it, it's worse than it was when we got here. When we got there, listen, there was nothing going wrong over there as far as Libya is concerned, except for the fact that the man dared to want better. That the man dared to say, if you want my stuff, you got to come correct with something that is more tangible than that terrible piece of paper y'all call the dollar or any other form of currency. You need to bring me your gold. You need to make sure that we are, as a coalition, you're going to deal with us to get everything we needed. How dare he? the destabilization of that particular region has been on an agenda, and it has been picked off one by one as they go in and do what they want to do. So with that said, I really want everybody to go out, get her books, go to her website. The website is also there. And I want you guys to look it up, check it out, get all the information that you need, because by far and all of your getting, you must get understanding. I want to thank everybody for being here. Dr. McKinney, thank you so very much. I don't know what happened to the screen, but it's like a cool little snapshot. It's like, hello, the snapshot. I love it. And I just want to thank you so very much, madam, for being with us this morning. You have graced me beyond measure, and I didn't even get to all my questions.
Well, that just means I have to come back. Yes. And we can have another discussion. Yeah.
Oh, we have so much to say. But again, most graciously, I want to thank you so very much for being here. You guys have a great afternoon. And I want everybody to remember what we always say here on the Lockhart Perspective, and that is that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. You guys take care.
I've always been a unique person, you know what I mean? Sort of laid back in a way, but very adamant and very passionate about what I believe. I think a lot of times that sort of throws people off because they don't expect me to have the mindset or the process of thought that I do. And so when you come in to watch my channel, you may hear a myriad of thoughts and ideas that could be different from others. What I want you to do is just sit back, like, share, and subscribe.
To receive instant notification each time I upload, please hit the subscribe button and the bell notification. Helping you.